Hi, this is Bill Wills.
And I'm Mike Snyder.
Thanks for checking out Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. We're around daily, 5 to 9. News, sports, traffic and weather on the 10s. Mike, a lot of going on, right?
Yeah, there always is. And we've got the latest in sports. Of course, what's going on with the Tribe, what may be happening with the Cavs and the Browns. And then, of course, we have the news and we get you around town with traffic on the 10s.
Be sure to follow us here on the podcast and get the episode each and every day. And join us if you can on Twitter. I'm Bill Wills at WTAM 1100.
And I'm at Snyder 1100.
Today's Wills and Snyder in Cleveland's Morning News.
Glad to have you with us.
Meteorologist Michael Estime says rainy showers this morning, partly cloudy skies, breezy. Temperatures will fall, 40s this afternoon. Clear tonight, be around freezing. Your Saturday, partly sunny and 40. Your Sunday, in the 40s. 54 right now from your severe weather station. Are we really going to go here with this story?
Oh, of course.
Scott Scuderese, producer extraordinaire alongside. You're Catholic.
Yes.
Appreciate your faith. Respected Catholic faithful who reside in Ohio and all their Catholics currently in Ohio are dispensed from obligation to attend Sunday Mass.
Did you know that? Yes, I did.
You got off this weekend, the weekend of 21st, 22nd, and March 28, 29. From the diocese, the Catholic bishops of Ohio, they encourage you to stay home, especially if you're sick. Churches will stay open, but they're saying it's okay if you don't go to Mass.
Right.
You
understand that. It's Lent. I'm going to Mass.
You know, when they canceled Dingus Day yesterday, that's when I thought, we're really looking at most events, it looks like the next 3 weeks, take a deep breath, cancel a bunch of stuff, and let's see where we're at. Dingus Day, April 13th. They called that off.
Already? It's almost a month away.
I'm just letting you know. Okay, now, there is a story posted, Wills and Snyder Facebook, willsandsnyder.com. Already getting some talk. This is some audio from Tucker.
Tucker last night because
Tucker Carlson last night. There is a story. Some Chinese officials are blaming us.
Yes, they are.
Did all this really start because somebody ate a bat in Wuhan, China?
I don't think it was, no.
All right, here's Tucker last night.
As death toll rises, it's important to never forget how we got here. This pandemic came out of China, and it came out of China for a reason. That's a country with poor health practices. It's a country where government officials deliberately covered up the early stages of the virus when it could have been stopped before it spread out of control. In fact, the outbreak may have begun not in a public meat market, but in a poorly run Chinese laboratory. Now, that's not our theory. Anyone who raises that theory on American television is attacked as a conspiracy monger. But this is a theory from a now-censored Chinese paper. A draft paper posted in mid-February, scientists at the South China University of Technology suggested that the coronavirus outbreak, began at the Wuhan Center for Disease Control, where an animal may have infected a researcher who then spread the disease outside the facility. The paper is explicit about this. We're going to quote it. The killer coronavirus probably originated from a laboratory in Wuhan, end quote. Now, we have no idea if that's actually true. But again, those were Chinese researchers making an evidence-based argument about the origin of this virus. That paper has since been taken down. No explanation has been offered for that, though you can guess.
Tucker Carlson, Fox last night, carefully putting it out there.
Yes.
That we're not saying this, but this paper in China from a spokesman from the government is saying it.
Is saying it. And then you got Zhao Lijian, a foreign ministry spokesman, says, be transparent, make public your data. U.S., you owe us an explanation. They seem to think that it was the U.S. Army.
They're putting it back on us.
Yes, of course. But all right, all know here, we know where it came from.
Some guy eating a bat over in some...
an eel? Or
China. All right, you can see more Wilson Center Facebook, WilsonCenter.com. Chime in on what you think, too, when it comes to that story. Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome.
And the amazing story, too, Kevin Love. How about that? Stepping up $100,000.
How about that?
Kind of an embarrassment to the NBA that one of the players gets out in front of this and says, wait a minute, we got a lot of people not going to
actually, the Cavs, in their initial release, they said they were going to do that.
I'm saying the NBA.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Here's Mike Snyder.
No, I was just saying that they actually did state that. But that is a good thing to do that, that Kevin Love is stepping forward. You know, it has been an unprecedented 24 hours in sports as, like dominoes one after another, seasons, tournaments, training, events were either canceled or delayed. Early in the week, the events would go on without fans, but when Jazz center Rudy Gobert tested positive for the virus and the NBA stopped its season, the dominoes began to fall. Now, starting with the Cavs, no players or staff members have shown symptoms of the virus. There was concern considering the Cavs had played the Utah Jazz 11 days ago. Now, two members of that Jazz team have tested positive. The NBA now on hiatus, so Commissioner Adam Silver explained what that actually means.
This hiatus will be most likely at least 30 days. I mean, and we don't know enough, as you've all said, to be more specific than that, but we wanted to give direction to our players and teams and to our fans that this is going to be roughly at least a month.
And as Bill said, Kevin Love committing $100,000 for workers. The Cavs, in their initial statement, said that they are developing a plan to compensate hourly workers at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Now, college, my goodness, NCAA tournament has been shut down. The high school basketball season and all other sports that were still in tournament play beyond basketball, everything shut down, of course. Now, Indians, no spring training now. Opening of the season for Major League Baseball delayed at least 2 weeks. And a question right now, actually, what do the players actually do at this point? Now, actually, earlier yesterday, before everything had been decided in terms of pushing back the season, Francisco Lindor talked about coronavirus.
You know, continue to do, have a high hygiene, all those things that can prevent it, and pray for the people that have it, and hopefully everybody will be okay, and we can find something that can stop this.
You know, you put things in perspective. All we could talk about was his contract a few days ago, and even he yesterday said, hey, he didn't even really want to talk about it with all that is going on. Now, the only event that I can see that looks like that may go on, looks like NASCAR is going to run a race on Sunday in Atlanta with no fans in attendance. NFL free agency is scheduled to begin on Monday, but there's even some talk that once the collective bargaining vote is completed, that possibly could be delayed. We'll get into more of that at 5:45. Home of the Indians and the Cavs. Mike Snyder, WTAM Sports.
I'll be shocked if NASCAR runs. I think the closer you get, it's like the golf.
Yeah.
The PGA yesterday, because I got home, I flipped it on with people are there. And they said, well, we're not going to have people the rest of the week. And then by last night, look, we're just going to call this off. Nobody can do anything.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, because you said it, I remember yesterday, you said, well, they're going on. There's people there. Then they said no autographs. It was like they went.
Every layer is like,
exactly.
And the part of the problem is any event depends on people, okay?
Yeah,
it's not just the players or the drivers. It's the support and it's the people.
Absolutely.
And whether you're a volunteer at a NASCAR race or they got to have security, all these other people are like, I don't want to be there.
Yes.
And I mean, as of right now, yes, they're going to run a race. But we heard that with every other event a day or two out. So I'd be shocked if they go ahead.
I hear you. I hear you on that. Right now, it's just everything shut down. And it makes sense. You know, it's like you, as I said, you know, we were talking so passionately about Lindor and the contract early in the week. And that just seems to be so diminished now, doesn't it?
It does. As something happens in life, we've had, things before. All right. More throughout the morning. Sports this time brought to you by Ken's Park Hill Roofing. Coming up, Bill Zimper says President Trump reportedly considering taking action under the Stafford Act. What is it? What's have you heard of the Stafford Act?
COVID-19, the coronavirus outbreak,
a pandemic.
Here's the latest.
What is happening?
From Cleveland's Morning News with Wilson Snyder.
Robert T. Stafford, his name. Let's go to Bill Zimfer this morning. Explain what this is and what President Trump could do with it, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. This is something the president could use to declare a national emergency under the Stafford Act. It's one of the tools that he would have to once again combat this. The other would be to declare a national emergency under the National Emergencies Act of 1976. The Stafford Act is a little more limited in that all it really does is it brings FEMA into the picture. It would provide legal authority for the federal government to provide assistance for states during declared major disasters and emergencies. It's usually used for things like hurricanes and floods and wildfires, but it has been used for health issues in the past. Back in 2000, the Stafford Act was used to help out New York and New Jersey for an outbreak of West Nile virus. So it has been used before. Now, why hasn't the president declared a national emergency? That's why, that's what many people are asking right now. And the feeling is that President Trump does not want to do that. He's been reluctant to do it because it would run counter to his general message that has been downplaying the effects of this virus, and it could spook the financial markets even more. So what would happen if the president does this, and he may do it as early as today, according to what we're hearing out of Washington, it would, number one, allow FEMA to get involved as far as helping out with things like logistics, also bringing in supplies, mobilizing, maybe most importantly, federal disaster funding that you normally hear about to recover from hurricanes and such. So we may get a declaration on this today. It's interesting that the National Emergencies Act, which provides even more sweeping powers for the president, was actually used by President Trump last year when he declared a national emergency along the southern border. So the question is out there. In fact, Chuck Schumer made it loud and clear. He said, the president needs to do it, and he needs to do it now.
Bill, we live, work here in Ohio. Pretty much it's state by state as far as the way this thing is being handled. I mean, our governor is speaking every day about it. Schools will be closed for 3 weeks, but it's not that way in every state. So it looks like right now they're leaving it up to the states to handle this.
Well, that is one way this can be done as well. This Stafford Act could be invoked on a request from the individual state. It would have to be approved, of course, by the federal government, or the president can make a blanket declaration. So it really can happen either way. Many states have already declared states of emergency, as you said, but they would have to request that the federal government declare their state an emergency as well, but it would be more likely that the president will declare a blanket national emergency.
Bill Zimfer this morning. Bill, thanks much.
Yep.
A few other headlines for you. At least 1,663 cases of the coronavirus, COVID-19, have been confirmed in this country, the United States. 40 people have died in this country. 46 states reporting that, plus Washington, D.C. confirming cases. Globally, over 127,000 confirmed cases, 4,700 deaths. Those numbers from Johns Hopkins. Both France and Israel will now close all schools and universities as the coronavirus continues to spread across Europe. Comes as the death toll in Italy is now at 1,000. The Canadian Prime Minister's wife, Justin Trudeau's wife, has tested positive for COVID-19. I just said to somebody yesterday, I keep waiting to see what Disney's doing. Well, sure enough, they're going to shut down. Walt Disney Company announcing they'll close the Walt Disney World Resort in Orlando. The Disneyland Paris will shut down Sunday. California's Disneyland and Disney Cruises will also suspend operations as of Saturday. And Universal Studios Hollywood will close on operations on Saturday as well. You already know about the NCAA. Major League Baseball suspending things. Broadway reacting as well, with the theaters in New York going dark, and will be for at least the weekend. Stock futures are this morning, at least if there's a slice of positive news on the money front. Futures up 500 points right now for the Dow. Market dropped yesterday. U.S. financial markets fell even further on Thursday. Dow Jones Industrial Average lost more than 2,300 points, almost 10%, biggest single-day decline since more than 22% drop on the 87 Black Monday crash. Dow sits at 21,200, down again over 2,300 points yesterday. Futures right now up 500. Be interesting to see how the stock market reacts today with the events of the last 24 hours. If anything, not to lose anymore, if we can just get a hold here going into the weekend, but we shall see. But right now, at least, stock futures up 500 points. More from Bloomberg coming up on News Radio WTAM 1100. 527.
COVID-19, the coronavirus outbreak,
a pandemic. Here's the latest.
What is happening?
From Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder.
Topic: test kits. What they're saying at the federal level, what we see at the state level, or at your nearby hospital if you need one. Michael Bauer joins me this morning. Michael, our world-famous Cleveland Clinic, days into this, said, look, we think we've got a way to test and get a result back in about 8 hours. Latest is they say they still need to order some equipment to get that done. That's here, though, around the country, concerned about the amount of test kits, right?
That's certainly a big part of it. I mean, listen, what we're seeing from Dr. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says America has failed to meet the capacity for coronavirus testing that it needs, and that was, you know, when you're looking at, we're not really geared to do what we need to do right now. He said that's failing. Let's admit it. And that when you go back in the history of this disease, which seems like it should be forever ago, but really we're looking at a number of weeks here, when the virus first started appearing in America, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had a very narrow criteria for who could be tested for it. They also had problems with the CDC with the tests that they were putting out. They were flawed. They weren't giving the proper responses to these virus tests that were going on there. So while that's all been a problem, and now things are getting a little bit better because private industry has stepped in to fill the gaps by the CDC, Cleveland Clinic, as you're talking about with their plans, there are still problems because even as the Cleveland Clinic is pointing out, maybe they need more equipment to be able to do this. Maybe there is a shortage of key chemicals across the country for other tests that are involved that you need to have those chemicals involved there. Some labs might have a higher capacity than others to do these kinds of tests. Maybe the man hours and the people hours involved involved there are all coming into play here, and thus it could be the reason why you're seeing a limited number of tests that are getting done. Plus, there's confusion on top of this all, Bill. I know that's a shocker when it comes to the government and confusion.
Really?
But there's confusion over different figures floating around for the number of tests that have been done, because private labs are taking up the slack from public health facilities, and right now there's no centralized database of numbers to be able to tell accurately who's been tested, where they've been tested, and what those results have. So while there are a number of different reasons here, in essence, there's no one reason for a testing effort being so slow and turning this into a mess and a debacle.
Michael Bauer on it this morning. I think we have visions of drive-through testing, but that's,
yes,
you know, that's a vision. It mainly the first people that need tested are the, you know, obviously the elderly people that are mm-hmm. of real risk maybe and possibly do have symptoms.
Yeah, that's very true. At the end of the day, we still do need to get out there and not just diagnose those sick people coming into doctors' offices and hospitals. We also have to test to do surveillance in the communities and see how this thing is spreading. So eventually the goal was, let's do this quickly so we can move from one into the other and start to determine how quickly these things are spreading. And they have not been able to do that. And now we're behind the eight ball trying to play catch up.
Michael Bauer, a little elbow bump. Keep your distance this weekend. Talk to you Monday.
You too.
The number of COVID-19 cases in Ohio is up to 5, according to Governor DeWine. Officials believe it's just the beginning, though. The state has confirmed a 55-year-old Trumbull County man with no travel history outside Ohio tested positive for the coronavirus. More than 50 other people are under investigation and testing with a presumed case. The Ohio Department of Health predicts 100,000 residents are already carrying the virus but are not showing symptoms. That News Radio WTAM 1100 is Bill Wills. Mark Bona, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, keeps us posted on what we can drink and eat and party when it comes to some events around town. Features writer over Cleveland.com. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Bill.
All right, let's start with beer and let's go to the can and talk to me about Thirsty Dog Brewing and the release.
Yeah, Thirsty Dog Brewing Company, the oldest and largest brewery in Summit County, is releasing their first can. A little, amazingly, with this trend, a little late. They've done a great job. They're shifting a bit to cans. They're coming out with Topaz Terrier India Pale Ale. I had a story that came out this week that talked to John Nayway about it, and you know, he saw, as a lot of brewers have, a lot of the positives with cans. I mean, you can go to more places with them. They are lighter, better for transport, and the key thing is for brewers and really for consumers, they don't allow any light in through like light colored bottles.
Right.
That light leads to some off flavors. You get a serious skunky flavor with beer. It doesn't last as long. So Topaz Terrier will be out very soon. It's going to be released in both the Flats East Bank and Akron Tap House locations. It's going to be coming out Saturday, March 21st. So Thirsty Dog now entering the can market, and this is just a huge thing for craft brewers. We're seeing a very serious and concerted shift to cans these days.
And looking ahead, he's going to do a summer shandy as well.
Yeah, he's coming out with summer shandy, and I think there's going to be more to come. I think pretty soon you're going to see fewer and fewer bottles. I think the only reason you're seeing bottles is for the last 10 to 15 years, so many breweries have invested in bottling lines, so you're seeing more and more of them invest in canning lines now as well.
Shout out to everybody in the brewing business in Northeast Ohio. What a successful weekend the Winter Warmer Fest was. 14th annual one, Ohio Craft Brewers Association, and a lot of different brews recognized, right?
Yeah, this is a really big deal. It's a fundraiser for the Ohio Craft Brewers Association, which is really the lobbying arm for the many, many craft breweries in the state. I've said for a long time this is my favorite fest of the year because many of the brewers show up. That isn't always the case because they're such a busy people, and they mingle with people. Now, there's a fuzzy state law at play that I admit I do not fully understand, but it basically amounts to the fact that I don't believe brewers can actually serve their own product at festivals. So you have a lot of brewers standing around willing to talk beer with anyone who comes up with them. For me, this is one-stop shopping. I mean, I call this Suds royalty. I mean, every brewer who is anyone showed up at this thing. It's a chance for them to meet with each other and with the crowd. And some news came out. Royal Dax is going to be opening up their photo house in Canton pretty soon. Collision Bend is canning Lake Erie Sunset, which won the Can of the Year honors last year. from the Brewery Collectibles Club of America, Ohio Brewing Company is expanding in Columbus. A lot of things going on in the beer industry. This event, Winter Warmer Fest, sold out 11 days ahead of time. By far, a huge success for the OCBA and all of the Ohio brewers who attended.
Great event, great news. Mark Bona, Cleveland.com, the features writer, and all the info for you. Follow him on Twitter, mbona30, always posting good stuff as well when it comes to places to enjoy a nice beverage, if you will, or meal, or an event. Mark, thanks. Weekend, governor's order says 100 people. I don't know how theaters are going to handle this. I mean, as we speak, Kevin Carr's with me at fatguysthemovies.com. I logged on to Regal. Everything's listed today, and I guess technically, and I don't want to say more than I know, technically I'm guessing they sell 100 seats for a showing, Kevin, and that's it. They can't sell any more.
Well, yeah, that just depends on the theater. I don't know if that's what they're going to implement. I don't know how they're going to work it. I don't think that's going to be a huge problem because I don't think we have any major movies that are going to be packing the houses this weekend. It's not like we've got like a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie opening this weekend.
That would complicate things if it was Star Wars weekend, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, they've already moved everything off the schedule. They moved James Bond. They moved A Quiet Place 2. They moved Mulan. Actually, this is the last weekend right now, in as the schedule says, that anything opens wide. Next two weekends are, no pun intended, wide open.
Let's talk about a couple things that are out there if you want to get out. Tell me about The Hunt.
The Hunt is a controversial movie. It was actually going to come out last year, but it got bumped in the wake of the Dayton and El Paso shootings. And they brought it out this weekend. Last chance, I guess, to get it out there before the coronavirus maybe does something to the theaters. But it's the story. It's basically retelling The Most Dangerous Game, where you've got these red state Americans that are kidnapped and then hunted by liberal elites, which is sort of the setup of the movie. So they throw this political spin on it, but it's a lot more than just that opening idea that offended everybody last year. It's got a lot of satire to it. It's a satire about extremes. It's a satire about policy and more politics and what you do and your actions have consequences, even if it's just saying things on Twitter or Facebook. So it's actually smarter than you think it would be, but I think it's going to trigger everybody.
Yeah, I just don't think I can get past the trailer. I remember this controversy last year. I have no desire. All right, let's talk about I Still Believe. Jeremy Camp, Christian singer. This is the story of him?
It's the story of his first wife who had cancer when they were very young in college, and the situation with that. It's their love story. Here's the thing. It's very cheesy, and that usually tends to happen, especially if the people who are in the movie were involved in it.
Right.
There's not a whole lot of depth to her character. It doesn't really go anywhere. I don't know anything about the character except that she liked him in the movie. I didn't think it was a very effective thing, and it seems absurd at times, some of the things that happen in there that you think they may have tried to overly simplify. Maybe if you're a huge fan of his stuff, but to me, I just found this, you know, not even, I mean, like a Hallmark movie is more doldrums than this one in terms of, the cheesiness.
Right, I mean, you're looking at it, obviously, as the critic we ask you to look at it, so we'll see. A lot of people are looking forward to seeing it this weekend. All right, thanks, Kevin Carr, fatguysthemovies.com. Podcast, more movie reviews, check out this. I've seen a hashtag March Sadness, and when it was March Madness, of course. Let's go through the last 24 hours, and we certainly appreciate the time. I know he has been very, very busy. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder, alongside the Commissioner of the Mid-American Conference, our friend Dr. John Steinbrecher with us. Appreciate the time, first of all. I know it's been a long week.
Bill and Mike, good to be with you this morning. It's certainly been a unique week.
Let me ask you, as a fan yesterday morning, watching this play out, the night before the NBA suspends, 9:30, 10 o'clock, before I go into a meeting, I see a comment Jay Billis made, the ESPN analyst, about, wait a minute, if the NBA is not playing professional athletes, why are we asking student athletes? And I thought to myself, now there's a good question that's going to need answered. And then within, I'm not saying he caused it, but within, you know, by 11 o'clock, there are stories starting to pop. You moved it back. You called a press conference. So as a fan, that's what I was watching. Can you take me through your morning yesterday and how this played out?
Well, I'll actually start where you began on Tuesday night. Well, it was a Wednesday night when the story popped on the Utah Jazz player being identified as having contracted. And so we start working backwards then, and we quickly identify that the Utah Jazz had been in the arena, the field house, 10 days before. And so now we're starting to have, we've got to figure out, do we have health issues because of that? And so we start working with Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, with NBA officials, with public health officials. And as we work overnight and into the morning, we were able to come to some conclusions that from a health risk factor, we were in a good position. But clearly, having the NBA player pop positive was a tipping point issue. And so I started in-person meetings and teleconferences with our athletics directors, presidents, about 8 a.m., and we start working through all sorts of different scenarios. One time we were considering if we consider moving forward and playing, implementing some health screening, as well as interviews with student-athletes to ask if they're interested in continuing to play so that we provide an opportunity for student athletes to have a voice in it. And then suddenly you step back and you say, you know what, maybe it's time to pull the plug on this. This is continuing to escalate. And it's time for people to get back to the campuses, get back to their homes. And so we move forward. So it was, a meeting with a lot of mornings, a lot of contemplation, and ultimately we ended up making a sad decision.
John, I believe the NCAA then announced the cancellation of the tournament after you had made your announcement. Had you been in consultation at all with any NCAA officials before making the decision on the MAC?
No, we really didn't. We made our decision based on what we felt was the right course of action. After we did so, I actually reached out and called Dr. Emmett, president of the NCAA, let him know, and asked, you know, how are their deliberations going? And he clued me in that they would likely have an announcement that afternoon. And we have a president of University of Buffalo, Dr. Satish Tripathi, is a member of essentially the executive committee. And I knew he was scheduled to be part of a teleconference that was going to start at 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon. And so I kind of knew what was going on once that got scheduled.
John, I've had a number of people, and I think it's pretty obvious why they couldn't, or you couldn't postpone and maybe reevaluate things, but was there ever any consideration of that? Or it really just probably isn't feasible, I'm guessing, in terms of the time frame for kids in school.
Well, you have school issues, you've got a number of logistical issues, and things of that sort. So postponement really wasn't an option for us. It's either we're going to play or we're not going to play. And, as we found out, as we did and many others around us, we're going to step back and get focused on all working together on this pandemic.
Dr. John Steinbrecher, Commissioner of the Mid-American Conference, with us for another minute. You know, we're talking about sports. So many other things on college campuses with the college life, theater programs, music, all these things. You know, John, as young people have those experiences on campus, that's what they're going to have to deal with for the next few weeks. Specifically in your area of sports, you've pretty much called off the spring sports season?
Yeah, we really have. We've gone ahead and canceled all competition and championship activities for the remainder of the academic year. We are limiting practice activities for the foreseeable future. We are curtailing athletic recruiting activities for the foreseeable future. And what you're seeing on our campuses, and again, they're all governed by their various state agencies, community things. They're having a number of things implemented upon them. And so you're seeing, in many cases, a number of activities across their campuses curtailed, and I think that will continue. And so we're really going to take it a lot of these activities, like the practices and recruiting, we said for the foreseeable future. We'll continue to monitor the situation. We'll stay in touch with authorities. And as the situation dictates and allows, we'll adjust accordingly.
Dr. John Steinbrecher, Commissioner of the Mid-American Conference, you have been so kind with your time this week. I think you guys have been fabulous on updates. Ken Mather, who handles a lot of your communication, a professional shout out to him as well.
Yes.
From us in the media, you've been very open getting the word out, and that has I think helped not just in your situation with the Mac, but I think all of us understand more what's been happening this week as we continue to deal with something that no one, you know, we just haven't dealt with before. All the best. Thank you so much, sir. We appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Good to be with you.
Take care. Dr. John Steinbrecher, Commissioner of the Mid-American Conference. Aviation expert Jay Ratliff with me on News Radio WTAM 1100. Couple of slices on this coronavirus story from him on the airline business. Okay, that industry has already been affected big time, and of course it is a business. They have employees, and they're all wondering about the future, huh?
Yeah, in fact, the latest estimate, Bill, $113 billion. That's the hit that airlines, as of this moment, they expect to be losing due to the coronavirus, and certainly that number's expected to climb. It seems with each day there's more news, which only makes the situation more dire. The latest was an American Airlines pilot was among those who tested positive for the coronavirus as well. So airlines at this point are offering, voluntary, temporary layoffs for people that want to, have some time off. And once they run through those numbers, they'll begin the process of, giving people, forced time off, and hopefully it'll just be a temporary situation. But like you and I have talked about, it takes a while for the industry to turn around, so it could be something that unfortunately is with us for a while.
China, where this all started, you and I talked weeks and weeks ago about airline flights in China and kind of envisioning what could or might happen in this country. What's the current industry in China?
China numbers, the airline numbers, are down 85%. Now, when you consider China's domestic travel, their aviation sector transports 1.2 billion passengers a year. Seeing that traffic fall 85%, that's a staggering percentage. And since it takes, as we've mentioned, the airline industry an extended time to fully recover, the hit to China's economy is going to be brutal. Now, here in the United States, we have 800 million people, 800 million a year that fly, a little bit more than that each year. And obviously, those numbers are going to be down drastically for this year as well. And I tell you, it's just amazing to see the drastic and dramatic drop-off in the future aviation plans, and parking garages that were once full at airports are now half full, and it's just it's getting worse and worse.
Jay, you have worked in the industry for years. That's why we talk to you each morning. You're an expert. You also, can I ask you a stock question?
Please.
You go to jratliff.com, see more what he does nowadays. Look, I'm a 401k person. We've been watching this thing drop and drop. Whenever we historically have had situations with drops, you watch around the world, and at some point you think, some morning you got to hit a bottom. Some country's got to say, okay, that's enough. Now, having said that, as we speak, futures look higher. It's a Friday. We're going into the weekend, though, where a lot could go either way. It'll be interesting to see how the market, though, reacts and what the algorithms, if you will, think going into the weekend.
Yeah, and the, of course, with the Fed talking about, pumping trillions of dollars into the market to give it a little bit of support is welcome news. But look, a few hours ago, the futures were up 900 points. So it's not where they start, it's where they finish. And really, the pivot point to this whole thing is the containment of the coronavirus. It's going to continue to get worse as people are worried about the impact of that virus. But once we reach that point where we turn and we start to have it contained and go the other direction, everything's going to respond because the foundation to the economy is here. But unfortunately, as big as the travel industry is, it's going to take a while for that to come back. And when you start seeing the slow progression of that, at least the market can start heading in the right direction. But I don't think the coronavirus containment is going to be with us for, I think we're talking weeks, hopefully not months, but certainly nothing in the near future. So, this is not a market I would jump in for any long-term dollars yet, even though some of these stocks look like they're incredible bargains.
Yeah.
They may drift down more on us because this uncertainty, the volatility or fear index, which is normally at 20-22, was up to 75 yesterday.
Wow. Aviation expert Jay Ratliff, again, more on him at jratliff.com. On the futures as we speak, locking in at a limit up, Dow futures up over 1,100 points at 5.26%. The S&P futures are up 5% at 126. NASDAQ up 400 points.
So it hopefully, and we'll see what happens and as it plays out throughout the day. But if Wall Street can hold on and at least not lose anymore today going into the weekend, we'll see. All right, 8:28, more from Bloomberg on the money coming up in about 10. News Radio W. They're still going to debate former Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Bernie Sanders this weekend. Earlier it was going to be in Arizona, no crowd. It's moved to D.C. Rick Klein, our political director, on that this morning. Rick?
Yeah, this is a strange one. It's going to be in a studio in Washington, D.C. Instead of in Arizona. It's going to have no audience. It's just going to have the two candidates and the three moderators. And one of the moderators is supposed to be there, Jorge Ramos from Univision. He's not even going to be there because he's worried about exposure to COVID-19 as well. So it is going to be an odd political event, as you can imagine.
This week for the Sanders campaign, Michigan, a lot of people were looking at that state. You know, overall, just in comparison, it looks like he didn't expand from 4 years ago and even contracted a bit.
Yeah, I mean, that I think is that's the disappointment for the Sanders campaign, is that they won Michigan, one of the surprises of the year 4 years ago, and they fell far short this time around. And that's what makes this path so difficult for him. You look at this realistically and say, well, where does he start to expand his base? Where does he actually go from here to start winning states and to start eating into the significant delegate lead? And man, I can't find a lot of places where that's going to work.
Rick, here in Ohio, we vote also on Tuesday. It would look a state that Biden should do well in.
Yeah, and I think looking at the history of this, knowing that that Bernie Sanders fell short 4 years ago, knowing that these are the kind of white working class voters, African American voters in the city, people that are more likely to be part of the Biden coalition, he's looking forward to a big night in Ohio that could put kind of an exclamation point on this period of the cycle. I also think the fact that society is shut down as much as it has, it takes kind of some of the air out of campaigning, but it happened to come at a time where the race was sort of winding down anyway.
And on that point, both candidates trying to get their word out, or at least getting something out on where they stand as far as handling this pandemic. You know, historically, something we've not been through yet, you know, for a campaign, it's a news cycle you want to be involved in somehow, right?
Yeah, and I think that's why you saw speeches yesterday by both the Democrats outlining how they would respond to a crisis. And I was struck by how kind of conventional some of Joe Biden's ideas were. And I feel like one of the themes of his campaign that's emerging is almost a return to normalcy. Just, he's not trying to be flashy. He's not trying to be interesting. He's not trying to be that different. He's just trying to show people, you know, this is how I would manage through a crisis. And maybe boring is good in that context.
Ohio voting on Tuesday. The debate this weekend in D.C. now between Biden and Sanders. And political director Rick Klein with it this morning. Rick, thanks much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
Biden's telling like Corn Pop. He's telling Corn, wash your hands, Corn Pop. Remember when that Corn Pop used to quote all the time? Debate this weekend. All right, this is Bill Wills. Thanks much. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Little elbow. Watch your space. Give Geraldo, wash your hands. Give Geraldo plenty of space. He's coming up. News Radio WTAM 1100. Love to connect with you on Twitter at Bill Wills WT.